Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hello everybody, welcome to the Saatkorn Podcast. I think I have a very interesting topic today. We'll discuss the topic storytelling for the business world. And my guest is a fascinating person. We never met in person so far, but we had two very interesting phone discussions or virtual discussions. And I asked him if he wanted to be guest on Saatkorn, and he said right away yes. It made me super happy. I talk about Terence Berry. His mission is to helping you master storytelling so you can win at business. So basically, I think that's interesting for everyone. He's visiting faculty at the Rotterdam Erasmus University, and he has his own business going, brand and story. You find that all in the show notes. Welcome you to Saatkorn, Terence.
Thank you for inviting me. Glad to be here.
I'm super happy. And I think we start with your own way into storytelling.
Yep.
Because it's very interesting. How did you start? What are your professional milestones?
Well, people ask me this all the time. And I think I end up telling a story about it, I suppose. This is sort of my third professional career. And it's really a combination of my first two careers, which I sort of merged together. So my first career is as a sort of corporate animal. So like a lot of your listeners, I worked for a corporation. I was in the automotive industry for 16 years. I worked for BMW Group, and I worked for Volkswagen Group in the Bentley division. So 16 years, I was heavily involved in London with BMW. I was then approached to go to the US with Bentley. I lived in New York. And I had a really fun time. I was sort of a regional manager, sort of working with the dealers, supporting the dealers, helping them tell the corporate story out to the consumer for the consumer to then buy the product. But after 16 years, I sort of woke up in New York one morning and sort of realized I was working for Bentley, which was an incredibly rewarding career, a great product, a great company. But I sort of realized that my job was, if I wasn't careful, it would become quite repetitive. So I thought, okay, well, what have I done and what do I want to do? And I realized looking back on 16 years that the successes I'd had was through my ability to persuade other people to more or less do what I wanted them to do. So that was persuading the dealers to invest in their facilities, persuading through the dealers customers to buy the cars, persuading suppliers to work more effectively, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I realized I was quite persuasive. And a lot of the ways I did that was through telling a good story or structuring the information in a more narrative way. But when I reflected on that, I realized that while I was good at it, I didn't really understand why or how I'd become good at it. And it was really through copying good leaders around me and learning from them. But I couldn't quantify it. I couldn't have taught somebody else how to do it. So I made aggressive career change, and I actually went to Hollywood. So I traded New York for LA. And I spent what was meant to be 90 days or so in the TV and film business, ended up being nearly 6 years. And I was working from writing, producing, occasionally directing. And all the time, what I was really learning was, because for all the sins that Hollywood has, and they have a lot of sins, what they're really good at is storytelling. So you cannot help but learn when you're in that environment. So I learned really how a story works. What is the structure of a story? Why is it a really good tool? And I then sort of thought, okay, well, I now have 16 years of corporate experience. I now have 6 years of sort of storytelling experience. I'm now going to fuse these two things together. And what I'll then do, and this is my third career, I'm going to go and help business leaders use that power, teach them how to use the power of storytelling so they can be more successful in their business.
That is a fascinating story in itself, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I really like the career changes you've made. And I mean, what storytelling really means in business, you covered that already a little bit.
Yep.
persuading other people to do something. That could mm-hmm. be very narrowed down the meaning of the whole idea of storytelling.
Yeah.
Given the time we're in, where we see all these tech products and the field I'm working in, work tech, HR tech, it's very efficiency and number driven business at the end of the day. It's a lot about technology. But I feel the more digital our surrounding gets, the more important the human side and also the storytelling becomes. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people have approached me in the last 18 months and said, you know, your business must be under threat. AI is going to replace you. You know, ChatGPT can tell a better story than you can. And the, you know, to an extent, that could be true. But what all the ChatGPT or any AI can do is take what's already out there and aggregate it and average it. And ultimately, business is about belief. It all comes down to we act in the ways that we believe to be right. So it's belief that drives everything. You know, whether that's a religion or whether that's a business or whether that's a community or whether that's a movement, when you really boil it down, it's somebody believes in something enough to take action. So the secret for a great leader is, are you good at building a belief system? Can you build a belief system that an employee wants to commit to, a belief system that a customer wants to be a part of, that suppliers feel reassured by? And I think when you look at your world or tech in general, I hate using Apple as an example because they've become such a cliche over the last 20 or 30 years. But if you look at that company, you know, founded by Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs, and I don't think Apple becomes what Apple became if Wozniak was on his own. So Steve Wozniak was the techie guy. He was the, you know, more of the computer nerd. Jobs was this really weird, and he was a weird man in many ways, a weird, bizarre combination of lots of different things. He always talks about technology and the humanities. But if you look at the story that Apple told, this was in the time when the PC was beginning to rise. You know, we had PC laptops on the horizon, and they were being sold as mechanical tools. And the story that Jobs basically then fermented at the very beginning of Apple was not so much about the tool, but about the people that used the tool. He said to consumers, he said, look, remember the Think Different campaign. He said, it's incredible people that change the world for the better. And the more incredible the people, the more important it is they get their genius into the world. And he basically said to the consumer, he told him a little story. And he says, you're an amazing person. You could change the world if only you could get your genius into the world. But today you're held back by the average PC. It's not a tool designed to release genius. It's a mechanical basic thing for basic functions. But at Apple, we build tools that allow you to set your genius free and bring it into the world and transform the world. Are you one of us? Are you a genius? Are you? And people like me, who think of themselves as creative, fell for it. And you were like, okay, it's twice the price. An outsider would say, but it does the same job as a PC laptop. But the insiders, the believers would turn around and say, no, it's not. It's a tool to release my genius. And I think that's the world we now, for good or for ill, that's the world we now live in. We live in a world now where hardware is being aggregated. We've seen that really with the rise of the Chinese being able to now sort of produce a lot of stuff much, much cheaper and really at the same pace of innovation. We're now beginning to see the aggregation of software. And then ultimately, what's left behind? You know, how do you differentiate in the world? And I would argue it's your brand, which is your story, and your ability for a consumer to feel a belief about you that's stronger than your competitors will be the difference between failure and success.
The whole belief topic is not only about facts, in my opinion. It's a mixture mm-hmm. between the actual facts that you have for a certain product or yep. certain service.
Yep.
Can do this and this and this or not. But obviously, that's not all. Mm-hmm. It's also the the brand, the trust level, the authenticity that goes with it.
Yep.
And in a world that becomes more tech-driven, I feel that the human side might not get less important, but way more important. Is that your take as well? Or do you say, well, it's more complicated than that?
No, I don't think it is more complicated than that. I think 10,000 years ago, we sat around the fire and the tribe leader was the person that inspired us the most. The tribe leader was the person that was most recognizable, the person who was able to touch the hearts and the guts of the people sitting around the fire. Because ultimately, we make decisions with our hearts and our guts first and then justify them with our heads. So we, you know, and everyone listening in the audience can think about this. You know, think of it at a time when you've made a decision or taken an action that in hindsight you reflected on and said you did it because you really wanted it rather than it being good for you. And we've all been there, and we do that, especially when we're younger. We make very impetuous decisions. And that's the nature of the world. You know, no matter how much we evolve, evolution is slow, and we're not that far removed from those caveman days. We still look for that charismatic leader who brings us around the fire and inspires us about what's possible. And I think what we're now seeing with the democratization of technology, you know, if you look at the influencer space, you know, this didn't really exist 20 or 30 years ago. But you look now that the average person could name Mr. Beast before they could name anybody in the American cabinet, or with the exception of Donald Trump, but name anyone else in the American government or whichever country you're listening in. Could you name the top 10 people in your government? Most people in the street couldn't, but they can name a Kardashian. They can probably name all the Kardashian sisters. They can name Mr. Beast. They can name. We're now in a place where the ability of an individual to use technology to harness attention and create meaning and create belief is higher than ever. And we've seen that done by influencers. And my big question to business leaders is, where is this generation of influencer business leaders? You know, we just don't have that. We still, you look at Elon Musk, and for all his criticisms, and a lot of people are very dubious of Elon, he's incredibly successful. And he tells a good story. And he's very charismatic in the center of his world. And that's sort of my challenge to a lot of the clients that I work with. I'm not looking for all business leaders to become Elon clones. I think that's the wrong way to go. But the reality is, I don't think we've lived, certainly in my professional career, we've never been in a time where it's easier for a business leader to get their message out to employees, to the world, to customers, to suppliers. You know, we now see an American government that's sort of run on social media. Where something written on Truth Social is government policy. That's unprecedented, certainly for the American political system, but also really globally. So we're living in very interesting times. So I think we're returning to that much more human space. As technology democratizes, I think what it's doing is, instead of suppressing humanity, it's actually elevating it. And what you're seeing is those charismatic individuals that can grab the attention of the people are getting paid more attention to. So the real challenge for leaders is, how can you do that? How can you tell compelling stories that your employees connect to, your suppliers, your customers, your shareholders, society? How can you become more influential rather than being a hidden suit behind a very bland strategy?
Let's talk a little bit about the how-to building a great story.
Yep.
So certain aspects that are really relevant. You mentioned some of them already, but perhaps if somebody now listens and feels like, oh, wow, that makes really sense, but how can I start and which ingredients have to be there to to tell a good story?
Yeah, and this is... This is all, people always ask me these questions, and you know, obviously I have a methodology, I have a process that I follow, and so does every other professional corporate storyteller out there. You know, there's a lot of us these days, not as many of us as claim there is on LinkedIn. You know, every second person on LinkedIn now apparently is a business storyteller. But there's a lot of us out there. And ultimately, we're all coming from the same place. We're all basically Aristotle clones. You know, we're all, because this is the big, big difference. Storytelling is a broad church. It's a very, very broad spectrum. And what a lot of leaders get intimidated by is they think business storytelling is the same as entertainment storytelling. Storytelling and entertainment is there to entertain. It is there to thrill. It is there to get an emotional reaction. It's there for people to click to watch the next episode. Business storytelling is different. The job of a business story is to deliver an idea into the mind of the audience so the audience will believe what you want them to believe. So it's much more persuasion. It's much more rhetorical. So it's rhetoric coming from Aristotle. So ultimately, the two or three big things, let's put storytelling a little bit to the side and let's talk about the more important thing first. The things that most business leaders get wrong is they don't think about their audience. The first thing you've got to think about when you're talking about business communication is, who is my audience? What do they want? I always say, you know, the Spice Girls were great philosophers. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you really, really want. And that's what you need to understand about your audience you're trying to persuade. What do they want mechanically? And that's in their heads. What's the mechanical thing they're looking for? But ultimately, their decisions will be taken by what they really, really want in their hearts and guts. So your employees may want more pay. That's the head saying, I'd like to have a higher salary. But their hearts and guts will tell you that what they want is a higher sense of purpose. They want to do work that's meaningful. They want to be able to go home and have a sense of pride in what they did that day. They want their neighbors to be jealous of the place they work at. We make most of our decisions emotionally and then justify them rationally. That's why Coca-Cola's, you know, slogan is taste the feeling. They don't say taste the sugar, they say taste the feeling, taste the emotion that this product brings. So what a lot of business leaders don't do is they communicate as if they were talking to themselves. So they write something as if they were writing to someone at their peer level. And this is especially a challenge and a big risk for C-suite. The C-suite have so much more information and insight and more than likely experience than the average employee. And if you write at your level, the employees just don't have the experience or the knowledge to make sense of that discussion or argument or piece of information. So the first thing for a business leader is, number one, you really have to know your audience and you need to know them at a very deep psychological level. So who is my audience? What do they want? What do they really, really want? And then what do they think already about the thing you want to talk about? Because they already have a story. So if you're talking about efficiency, they've already got a story in their heads about efficiency. The story they might be running in their heads is, well, we're inefficient because Jeff's an idiot. You know, my boss is an idiot. Jeff's an idiot. Jeff can't get... There's something going on and you need to understand that story to be able to sort of build your story to counterpart or move against that. So that's the sort of the big first thing is when you come to communicating as a leader, number one, understand your audience, understand the predispositions they're bringing to your story. The second thing then is, what's the idea? What's the message and meaning that you ultimately want to deposit into the minds of the audience? And again, this is where a lot of business leaders make a lot of mistakes because we make decisions with very, very simple ideas. We're not complicated creatures. We love simple concepts. We love short words. So when you communicate an idea as a leader, it should be short and punchy and memorable and preferably emotional. You shouldn't be communicating vast strategic ideas. That's the average employee doesn't want that. They just want something short and punchy and emotional they can bond around. And then when you've got those two things, then you have to think about the story. And the analogy that I would use is, and the one that sort of resonates with a lot of my clients is, I say, look, think of a story as a truck, and your message and your meaning is the contents inside the truck. So your job is, okay, I have this cargo, this message and meaning, this short idea that I believe will change the belief of my audience. Now I have to get it to my audience, but you might want to put it in a 40-foot truck. You might want to put it in an off-roader. You might want to put it in a sports car. You might want to, the vehicle you put your message into is dependent on the audience, the territory you need to cover, the environment, et cetera, et cetera. So that's sort of the way to think about a story. And we can talk about how a story is actually constructed in a second, but those three things are critical. Number one, who is the audience I'm trying to persuade? What's their existing belief structure? Number two, what's the belief I would like them to have? What's the message and meaning that would trigger that belief? And then number three, what's the best way for me to deliver that? What's the right sort of delivery mechanism or vehicle to wrap around that?
All right, got that. Thousands of questions in my head. That's way too much for this podcast. And let's talk a little bit about a good story in itself. So are there certain elements? Obviously, everybody knows this concept of a hero story.
Yeah.
But perhaps it might be different in a business context.
Yes and no. And I mean, ultimately, we don't like... I shouldn't generalize. The vast majority of people don't like stories about things. They like stories about people. We rarely gossip about the printer or the coffee machine, but we gossip about the people who misuse the coffee machine or the printer or whatever. So we are just hardwired to be interested in people more than we're interested in things. And again, a lot of business leaders tell stories about the GS9000-4, and nobody cares. I always talk about, you know, big conventions or conferences, and businesses spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on conferences. And I always say to them, you know, be very careful, because if the first thing that your conference attendee, they'll go home to their partners. They've been away for 3 days and their partner will say, well, how was it?
The food was
great.
The first
thing they say was, well, the hotel was terrible, or the food was terrible, or Jeff got drunk again, or... If that's the first thing they say when they walk in the door, you've just wasted millions of dollars. What they should be saying is, you know, my leader got up on stage and told me this inspiring story. I can't believe I'm lucky enough to work here. I can't wait to get to work tomorrow. I can't wait to tell the team. That's when you've invested the money properly. So business stories still have to be about people. But those people can be the client, it can be the customer, it could be society, it could be whoever. So let me give you an example. I think if you look at the Apple story was not we make computers. The Apple story was about someone. It says society is better when geniuses are able to bring that genius into the world. So it was a story about genius. And it says, and what holds them back is the tools that surround it. We make a better tool so geniuses can bring that into the world. So that's a simple story about somebody, geniuses. Or actually, in this case, sort of somebody is society. What does society want? Society wants to be better. How does that happen? The solution to that is geniuses bring their genius into the world. What's stopping them? What's the challenge? The challenge is bad technology. Solution to that is better technology. Apple brings better technology. The result then is a transformed world. So that's literally a simple story. Tell me a story about someone who wants something, faces some challenges, applies some solutions, and gets a result. And from that journey, we learn something. So literally as we're recording this in the last day or two, we've got rumors that SpaceX is going to buy XAI, Elon Musk's AI company, and that Tesla's going to be involved. And I can begin to see this story beginning to bubble up in that. Because I think SpaceX is probably the most impressive company I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years. And their story, again, is very, very similar to Apple's. You know, they turn around, they're still talking about society. They say, you know, we all want society to prosper. That's the someone. So what do we want? We want society to continue to prosper, humanity to move into the future strongly. But there's a problem. We live in a world where, unfortunately, greed and selfishness all exist, and we tend to find that we are quite self-destructive. So there's an incredible risk to humanity. So someone, humanity, what does it want to survive? What's the threat? Humanity itself and our own bad instincts. What's the solution? Well, at SpaceX, we're going to basically take humanity and get it off the planet. We're going to take it to Mars and beyond. The result of that will be that humanity prolongs for hundreds or thousands of generations to come. That's a very, very powerful story that resonated. And if you look at that company, You know, back when we put men on the moon in the late 1960s and early 70s, you know, the average age of the NASA employees was in the mid-20s. These were young people motivated and inspired by John F. Kennedy and by the mission to go to the moon. And now you look at SpaceX, people in their late 20s is the average age, and they're doing the same thing. People want to be inspired by strong missions and by really strong purposes. And I think that's ultimately, when I look at the companies that are all the most successful, when you boil it down, they have society-serving stories where society wants something, it's being held back by something, and we are going to come along and fix that burden. And the result will be a better world. And whether that's the WWF, the World Wildlife Foundation, or whether that's SpaceX, or name any number of companies. But I would argue, if you get to the top of this Fortune 500, three quarters of those companies, when you really boil it down, would have quite a similar purpose-driven story underneath.
Fascinating. Given your experience, what are the major faults that business leaders make when they try to tell a story?
We would probably need another podcast for that. Well, number one is that they don't. Number one is they think they're telling stories, but they're not telling it. They're just delivering information. So a strategy, I would argue a strategy should be a story and a story should be a strategy. Those two things should be connected together. Most strategies are not stories. They're lists of achievements or targets or goals or KPIs. So I think that's a big, big one, which is most leaders who think they're telling stories actually aren't telling stories. I think those that try to, they tend to be too narrow, too close to home, too mechanical. Sometimes the most, I can't even remember who said it, but there's a quote which is basically, in the specific lies the universal. Mm-hmm. And the idea basically being that, you know, if you've experienced it as a human being, then every other human being has probably experienced it. So a lot of leaders are terrified to reveal anything about themselves. They think that because they're a business person, that talking about their weaknesses or their flaws or their mistakes is going to make them weaker. And actually, we now live in a world where vulnerability is powerful. So this idea, this is something I push a lot with my clients, is if you really want your audience to resonate with what you're talking about, you've got to make what you talk about human. And the most human thing you will find is looking inside your own experiences and finding it in your own heart, your own gut, and being brave enough to spill that out into the story. If you are a reserved person and you hold back and you use your big brain to communicate, then ultimately your big brain is not going to communicate with the hearts and the guts of the audience. So I think that's probably the single biggest mistake, is being too cautious, too careful, too restrained. Bravery is important. You know, there's another famous quote about photography, which is, you know, having your photograph taken, it's a moment of discomfort for a lifetime of pleasure. And I think it's the same for business leaders with a story. Yes, it's a little difficult. Yes, I know you weren't taught to do this. Yes, I know you've got a degree, an MBA or a PhD or whatever you've got, or, you know, whatever professional qualifications. No one ever taught you how to tell stories in your MBA class. I know that. But ultimately, the greatest leaders go beyond that. They dig, and they're willing to be brave enough to put themselves into their stories and tell that. So, yeah, so that's probably, you know, for all their sins, you know, Elon's a good example. He pours it all out there. And again, I go back to where we started the conversation. We now live in an influencer generation. And I think if business leaders really want to have the impact they want to have, and I think we as a society need them to have, because let me take one little aside. The reason I really do what I do and I'm passionate about it, I think we're now living in a very different world. I think the days of government being able to drive policy and government to change the world, I think are coming a little bit towards the end. And I think more and more people are more brand connected to corporations than they are necessarily even their countries. So the best companies, I think, are the ones that can influence the world in a positive way. So from that point of view, we desperately need a new generation of leaders to come through that can grab the worldwide audience and inspire them to be better. We used to have that rhetorical gift with politicians, and I think we've lost it. We now have a generation of politicians that just don't have that skill. I think the vacuum that's been created, I think, should be filled by business leaders. But you've got to be brave enough to step into that position.
Now, that's truly inspiring. Thank you for this motivational speech. That's 3 minutes or so. I really like that. Given the time constraint here on the show, we are almost coming to the end, unfortunately. Of course, I will include your LinkedIn and your company URL for Bryant & Story in the show notes. So if somebody is interested to get to work with you, they might contact you.
Sure.
Last question from my side, Terence. Inspiration. That's great because Zartcorn has a claim, inspiration for a better working world. What was the last thing that inspired you?
Well, let me use my own life, I suppose. I think there's a lot of inspiring things in the world. And I think the more you look around you and the more you look closer to home, the more inspired you are. I think the things that inspires me are my kids. And I could give you an answer of, you know, a great book or a, you know, a great movie or a great business leader or a great speech or a great, and all of those things can be inspiring. But ultimately, you've got to get up in the morning and you've got to find the drive to do what you want to do. And, to, you know, we all work very hard. We all probably work too hard in today's world. And you've got to find the inspiration to keep going to want to do it. And I find that through my kids. You know, my kids are 9, well, almost 10 and 12. And I just look at the way they handle technology, the way they look at the world, the skills they have, the confidence they have and how they approach the world compared to when I was a kid. And I think we're living in amazing times. You know, everyone sort of is bemoaning all the challenges in the world. And there are a lot. But I think we're on the cusp of a really golden generation. If we can, again, stop ourselves doing anything reckless and stupid, I just look at this next generation of kids and they're missing a little bit of social skills. Maybe they're spending a little bit too much time on screens, but they're incredibly creative and they're incredibly connected. And they inspire me. I look at that and I think, yeah, if we can leave a slightly better, more organized world, if we can get corporations to act a little bit more honorably and a little bit more purpose-driven, if we can get a generation of leaders that really begin to take us where we need to go, you know, my favorite speech of all time is the moon speech by JFK, you know, and he inspired 500,000 workers to unite around a project to do the impossible, and they did it. With 1960s technology. I look at the technology we have today. If we have that next generation of leaders who come out, who inspire us to do the impossible, who knows what we can do? So, yeah, so that's my, every morning I look at those two and I'm like, yeah, we've got some hopes.
Yeah, I truly can connect to that, given that I also have 4 kids. That's great. I like your optimism. That's really needed in this world. And I thank you so much for taking the time to spend half an hour here with me on Zartcorn. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. I really enjoyed it.
So, das war diese Zartcorn-Podcast-Episode. Ich hoffe, dir hat Spaß gemacht und sie hat dir gefallen. Bevor ich jetzt hier rausgehe, noch ein kleiner Tipp für dich. Abonniere doch kostenlos meinen Zartcorn-Newsletter. Dann gibt's jeden Sonntag alle Podcasts, alle News, alle Artikel, alle Verlosungen, alles, was ich auf Zartcorn so mache, gratis in dein Mailpostfach und du hast bequem alles an einem Ort und verpasst nichts mehr. Das Ganze kostet, wie gesagt, nichts. Den Link zum Abo gibt's in den Shownotes. Würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns da wieder treffen. Ganz lieben Dank und bis bald. Ciao.